This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I know we're all celebrating because today's the anniversary of the Pitney Bowes postage meter first being used in 1920. To talk about how you can communicate more successfully and also without stamps, we welcome the author of The Bezos Blueprint, Carmine Gallo. In our headlines, mortgage rates are through the roof. Who's to blame? Seriously, I want names! Plus, we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to Stan, who's trying to figure out how to save for his dream home, even though the construction costs make him want to vomit. And then I'll go all postal on the trivia. And now, two guys who are going to send you first class to financial freedom, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
And a happy Wednesday to you, Stackers. I am Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. It's the middle of your week, and man, do we have a great show for you today. So sit down, relax, because you made it to the next hour of Financial Geekery Fun. And the original Financial Geek sitting across the card table from me, shuffling his notes, Mr. OG is in the game.
I'm not shuffling my nose. I'm opening mail for my insurance company because they, all of my insurances are due on the same day.
Why does he say it like that?
Car insurance, home insurance.
Insurance. Why does he say it?
So they,
Is that like pecan versus pecan?
I get yelled at in my house for saying cream cheese instead of cream cheese.
Cream cheese.
Sounds like
it. And my wife goes,
it's horrible.
I say that.
I would too. It's like you creamed your cheese.
It's not good. But let's get back to OG's insurance.
Anyway, OG, your insurance all due on the same day.
Yeah. Several of the policies auto pay, and then apparently one doesn't. So then they send you 400 messages. Oh. They're like, your insurance is going to cancel. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's auto paid.
I am totally with you.
Everything's auto paid except this one thing. And it's like, why don't you auto pay that? Well, it's not set up. So set it up that way. And they send me like, look at all this mail to say your car insurance is going to, oh, just kidding. It didn't. Stupid.
Hey, guess what, guys? Carmine Gallo's here today. Carmine Gallo, the same guy that did Talk Like Ted, teaching people to be better speakers. And this is the time of year when you're probably much more likely to communicate more often with more people about more things, holiday time, generally soirees and holiday fun. And as we get back into this routine of hopefully normalcy as COVID continues to wane, you want to be ready to communicate. Carmine Gallo going to help us today. But before that, we're going to dive into the mortgage situation, OG. Talk about fun. That's like the best.
Oh, I'm ready to get started with that.
Oh, let's do it. But before all that, you know what we got to get started with first? I think we should begin by having everybody sit down for a second because we need to talk about this. This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. It's Military Appreciation Month, and I want to share appreciation for one of our stackers I met in Cleveland for the second time. Keith just drove his car off the road. But Keith, a proud military member, I enjoyed seeing Keith. And you know what? Eric was there too, who was in the Marines, but both of these fine gentlemen served our country that I met in Cleveland. I want to give a shout out to them. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just Keith and Eric, but all their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. They offer 24/7 help from their U.S.-based member service centers. They offer resources like Best Cities After Service to help veterans transition to civilian life and Best Careers for Military Spouses to support our military families. All branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families are eligible for Navy Federal membership. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate this month, and you'll see all of our Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Super important there, wasn't it?
I mean,
Doug is on mute.
Sorry. Was I on mute the whole time? No, I wasn't.
Yes.
Well, not when we were talking about insurance.
You still are now.
Sadly.
I'm not on mute.
Can't hear you. Are you talking?
What?
Huh?
What'd you say?
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our headline today comes to us from the Wall Street Journal. This is written by Telus DeMos. Why mortgage rates are so darn high. The piece begins, it makes sense that mortgage rates are up, but by this much, that requires some explanation, OG. Freddie Mac's weekly average 30-year fixed rate has cracked 7% for the first time in two decades, a rise just shy of 4 percentage points from the end of last year. By contrast, benchmark 30-year U.S. Treasury yields up around 2.5 points. What this means is that the gap, or the spread in financial lingo, between mortgage rates and Treasury yields has ballooned. First of all, let's get the bajillion-pound gorilla in the room out of there. It's been two decades since we've seen 7%. Are you kidding me?
No wonder we're all complaining.
Yeah, we got a bunch of kids out there that have never seen real interest rates, OG.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I'm sure you do too, Joe, early in your planning career, like refinancing from 8 to 7.
Right.
Going, this is amazing. It's down to 7. You know, 7 to 6. Now everybody's complaining because it was 3 a year ago.
I remember some people that hadn't refinanced their house since the 80s. And still we're sitting at a 9% interest rate. And we'd talk about getting them, you know, 6.75 or 7% and going, yeah. This is amazing.
Look at all the cash flow. That's how, yes. that's how you're going to fund your Roth is refinance yes. your house and you've got cash flow. Boom.
Unbelievable.
Now it's the other way around. Now you unfund your Roth to buy a house.
The spread is wider, and this is going to get really nerdy. So put your
nerd
hat on right now. But a lot of this has to do, OG, it turns out, with something called mortgage-backed securities. Banks and the Fed largely are the buyers of these securities, which are not exactly what rates are based on, but a lot of the reason why rates move differently than what the Fed's actually up to. And because there aren't a lot of buyers in that market besides banks, and banks have been shoring up their own balance sheets waiting for more recessionary times to come, that's why we've seen mortgage rates go up. So I guess I guess we can blame the banks. But the bigger thing is, regardless of who to blame, I think the bigger thing is we had a Fed move a couple of weeks ago and 0.75 point raise. And now mortgage rates still acting differently than what the Fed does. Don't base your feelings about your mortgage on what happens with the Fed.
Well, it's not a direct correlation, but it's going to rhyme a lot when the Federal Reserve, I mean, you just have to kind of move upstream. So the Federal Reserve is setting the rate at which they lend money to banks. That's the number that they're saying, hey, if you need to borrow money as a bank, here's how much you can get it from us for. And just like they're borrowing money, then they lend money. The bank then turns around and lends money at a rate higher than what they borrow it for. There's got to be some, like you said, some spread in there between their borrowing costs and then their selling costs, basically, kind of that initial piece. And then when you combine that with the fact that as mortgage rates rise, you have to factor in additional things like defaults and that sort of thing. So then when you take all of the mortgages together and say, okay, I just did 100 mortgages and I want to put all these together and I want to sell them to an investor, that investor is going to evaluate the whole thing and say, well, these mortgages are paying 6%, but I'm not going to buy it based on 6. I want to buy it based on 8 or something like that. And so then that's going to drive that secondary rate even higher. So it is ultimately a big giant supply and demand game. And frankly, that's what the Federal Reserve is trying to do. The Federal Reserve is trying to make it so onerous for businesses and for people to borrow money that instead they hold on to their money, which then causes the prices of things to start coming down because there's not as much demand for them, and or at least stop accelerating at a higher rate and then kind of right size everything and go, okay, we're back to normal now. You know, the problem is that it's too easy to get money. People have too much of it in terms of liquidity and they're not caring at what price they spend. You know, they just like, I don't care how much gas is. I'm just going to buy it. And so then the next person behind you who does care how much gas is, for lack of a better term, punished because of your indifference.
We're like drunken sailors on shore leave right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's winding down for sure. But even the Federal Reserve said a couple of weeks ago, they're not making a dent. They're jacking up interest rates and they're not even having an impact.
And even at this point, at the risk of changing some fairly, I won't say great, but okay, employment numbers, right? I mean, you jack it up to a certain point, employment numbers start to get affected. Well,
employment numbers are fantastic. Again, we have to reset what kind of normal full employment is. Full employment is 6% unemployment. That's the healthy amount of people looking for jobs versus people that have them versus people that want to move between jobs and that sort of thing. And I don't know the number that we're at, but the last one that I remember seeing was the 3s and 4s.
Much better. Much, much better.
So that means that there's too much, you know, the employee has too much power in that percentage, which is good for the employee, but bad for the employer. And, you know, so everything is this big symbiotic relationship. And, you know, you move one lever and it's going to have secondary and tertiary effects down the line. But the biggest thing that we have to avoid at all costs is inflation. The recession is a small drop of penicillin to offset the larger pain of inflation, because inflation kills everything. If you do the new retirement calculator tool that you were talking about in the last couple of weeks, and you do your financial plan and you say, I want to do it at inflation historical, which is about 3%. And then you say, I want to do it at inflation historical plus 1. So do 4. You will crater your retirement plan, because the compounding effect of higher inflation is so detrimental to long-term investment plans. So that's the cancer that we have to get rid of, is inflation at whatever cost.
It's funny. We showed that at our event a couple of weeks ago, walking through just mistakes people make with calculators. And Stephen Chen, the creator, said that forgetting inflation is number one. And he showed a difference between just 1% inflation and 4% inflation, where somebody fairly easily makes it, this hypothetical person, at 1%. And then if you move it up to just 4, just normal inflation, because you realized, oh my God, I forgot normal inflation, they're already hosed. So to your point, we get this hyperinflation stuff, this craters, and then forget about employment. Who cares about employment? You know?
Yeah, in the short run, it's very painful. And in the short run, it's not as dramatic. But the issue, of course, happens, you know, more and more down the line. And as companies and the government try to offset the inflationary issues with more inflation, right? So what are we reading about? Employers saying, hey, I need to give bigger pay raises because of inflation. The Social Security Administration saying we're increasing Social Security by 9% because of inflation. Some people say, well, that's just keeping up. True, but you just got a big pay raise. So what's the tendencies when you get a big pay raise? Your big pay raise is to consume it. And so now what did you do? You just kind of fed the monster a little bit more of saying, now I'm going to spend more money because I have more money to spend. Not all the cases, and certainly not all the people can do that. But it's a very sinister financial issue that we just all have to kind of bite the towel and get through it.
I think that's a great explanation of what's going on. But what we do here, I think, OG, is the important part. I think the first thing is, if you have any variable credit line right now, you are way past the time that you needed to clean that up. Like, get your debt strategy in order. I think that's probably job one.
Yeah, high interest credit card debt is, it reacts very quickly. I think within a day or two of the Fed rate move, Amex and Visa increase their rates. They don't hold off. They get you the next minute as soon as they can because of their spread. It sounds really silly to consider consolidating or refinancing, you know, getting a home equity line of credit or something like that. But if you have a boatload of consumer debt, you have a boatload of high interest credit card debt, and you're paying 22%, paying 7's a heck of a lot better than 22. It's not as good as 3 was 12 months ago, but it's way better than 22. I would say that that's probably the number one thing. You can pay attention to your spending a little bit more. I think that's the second piece, is be aware of where you're spending money and try to make a decision about, you know, what's most important. We're getting into the holiday season and people like to get a little crazy, a lot crazy.
Oh, that,
a lot of crazy.
Yeah.
I tried to increase my personal spending by winning the Powerball a couple of weeks ago. It didn't. Was unsuccessful.
You didn't get the $1 billion?
I did not. I won $4.
Oh.
Which is another way to say I lost 96.
Exactly. But it's on sale, 20% off. I had to buy it.
My sister won 7.
Out of all those numbers, I really only got $4. Yeah. But anyways, if you have the ability to save more, pay attention to where your bank is at relative to interest rates. You know, let's say that you did the right thing and you've got a cash reserve, you got an emergency fund, you're doing all the things, but your money's sitting at Bank of America paying 0.1. To heck with them, man. Go find a bank that is paying 2.5% or 3% now. Go get yours while you can, because that's the good side of high interest rates, is that you get to earn some interest on your cash. So if you have extra cash, find a place to park it that is going to pay you some money.
Yeah, there are times to sit still, which is most of the time. I don't feel like this is one of those times. I think it's time to get your debt strategy together, your holiday spending plan together. Like, having this locked down this year specifically, I think, is a phenomenal thing to be focused on right now. By the way, this piece gets very nerdy. So for our Uber nerds who want to know exactly the reasons why, in great detail, mortgage rates not following at all what the Fed's doing over the short run. Although, to OG, to your point, over the longer terms, it will come back. Things will kind of end up moving, not in lockstep, but closely. If you want to know more about that, we've got you covered with a link on our show notes page. And of course, we're going to have a lot more on spending plans, debt strategies, like we always do, in our newsletter, the 201, which takes all these conversations we have. And Brooke Miller gives you links to go even deeper on these topics so that you can get your financial planning in order. StackingBenjamins.com/201 to sign up for our free newsletter. Carmine Gallo waiting upstairs. Carmine has been on the show before. Man, he brings it. Last time he was here, he was talking about talking like TED, talking like you're about to give a TED talk. Today, he's got a new book out, The Bezos Blueprint, talking about the same, but when you write. He's, of course, Wall Street Journal bestselling author, internationally popular keynote speaker, has been a Harvard instructor,
My personal relationship with Carmine is actually a good one as well. He's the first guy to include me in a book. He actually included me, contrary to what you guys say, because I know, Doug, you've made this point before. Secrets from the World's Best Communicators includes stuff about me in there.
Come on.
I know.
He was really scraping the bottom of the barrel for content, wasn't he?
The important thing that I'm curious about is, did he include you on page 338?
Or sooner.
Oh, you mean like way at the back of the book or at the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Exactly which page?
Yeah. Yeah. Like in the back?
I'm about halfway done. I'm about halfway through.
Doug and I tend to find ourselves relegated to in various books.
I see what you're doing here.
Oh, there
wow,
it is.
Wow, okay. It only took him like a year.
He didn't even get it.
We've made that reference how many times? And he's
I put you idiots in the way back of my book for some reason. I'm not sure.
Wow. Hey, you're in the thank yous. You made the thank yous of the book. I think that's fantastic.
The part nobody reads?
338. No, it's in the actual stuff. I think 338 or something like that.
I always start there. I always go, I'm like, who does the author thank? Oh, look, he thanks OG. Then he thanks Doug. Yeah, good stuff. Anyway, did I tell you Carmine Gallo's here? Carmine Gallo, the amazing Gallo.
Bring him down.
Yeah. Doug, while he's coming down the stairs, why don't you give us some trivia, sir?
Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Joe's mom's upstairs pouring a second margarita because on this day in 1920, the Model M postage meter was put into commercial use. I know that you all know the legend, but for all you young ones in the audience, let me review it. The postage meter was the brainchild of inventor Arthur Pitney and industrialist Walter Bowes. Well, one thing we haven't ever talked about is the fallout from the postage meter, which the media always sweeps under the rug. You know who wasn't happy about postage meters? Stamp collectors. It looks like someone who collects a stamp is called a can we say this in polite company? Hey, Joe, are you sure on this one? All right. A philatelist. That must be from the Latin, meaning to lick. Oh, boy. So, my question is, just how much did a first-class U.S. postage stamp cost in 1920? I'll be back right after I philatel this thank you card to my therapist.
Well, last Friday was Veterans Day, and Veterans Day comes every year, but companies rarely thank veterans in a way that's meaningful, and veterans deserve to be thanked in a meaningful way. And at Navy Federal Credit Union, every day is Veterans Day. They thank veterans in a way that's meaningful. They offer resources like the VA Loans Hub and Best Cities After Service. They offer veteran employment assistance partnerships with nonprofits like The Mission Continues. They're a top VA home loan lender. They offer personal finance counseling, and they offer 24/7 member service. They have a growing community of over 1.8 million veterans like you. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/veterans. Insured by NCUA, an equal housing lender. We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing. But they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. Oh, God. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right. U.S. Cellular, a company that sells phones, wants us to put down our phones and to see what we find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Hey there, stackers. I'm chronic dry mouth sufferer and number one philately fanboy, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Apparently, the post office is no longer a family-friendly place because there could be people in there philately. They really should black out the windows like that Velvet Touch just off I-75. Anyway, well, like anything, the cost of philately has gone up enough that your significant other may start questioning the cost. A first-class stamp, which remains the only thing I can afford to still go first-class on, is 60 cents. Turns out, no one's philately for free. So, how much was a first-class stamp in 1920? 2 cents. And now, with his 2 cents on communicating like the best entrepreneurs in the world, Carmine Gallo.
And Carmine Gallo back in Mom's Basement. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for inviting me back. I know we have a long history together. So thank you and congratulations on the success of the stacking of the Benjamins. I see the stack just keeps growing.
It does. Literally, the big old $100 bill behind me. Yes, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I want to start off with something that you told me actually in an email last night that I did not know, which is we have a lot of military members that listen to our show, Carmine, and yeah. You've done some speaking, I would guess, about communication, effective communication with members of our military. Tell me about that.
Oh, it's always an honor and an opportunity, and I learned so much. I have spoken to everyone from Top Guns to Marine Corps fighter pilots to Green Berets in North Carolina. They even took me into the quasi-secretive training facilities, you know, where the Green Berets train. I really enjoy speaking to military groups, especially senior leaders, because in order to get to a senior leadership position at any level of the military, you have to be a very good communicator. The whole idea of a debriefing a mission is to break it apart, to communicate simply. So there are a number of things that I've learned from military audiences that I put into my books. And I've also noticed that companies like Amazon, which I've spent 3 years researching, will often use methods and strategies to teach people better communication, more effective writing, that started from the military. So the military, senior leadership, you have to be a good communicator and a good writer to reach that level.
What was phenomenal to me about your current project about studying Jeff Bezos is that a lot of the things, Carmine, that people would expect of being a better communicator, it's exactly the opposite. And I want to get into this in a very specific way, the way you start off in your book, which you say it's 2004, we're at Amazon headquarters, and something big happened in 2004. Can you tell me about this particular day?
Jeff Bezos sent an email that shocked his leadership team. He said, at our very next meeting, you are no longer allowed to communicate in PowerPoint, and you are to write, at that time, a 4-page narrative memo. And he was specific, narrative meaning real sentences and paragraphs, nouns, verbs. He wanted to see ideas pitched in writing because he came to the realization through some of his own research and anecdotally that PowerPoint is not the best decision-making tool, that anyone can just put bullet points on a slide, but it doesn't show that you really thought through this idea or this potential project. Think of it from the back end. They call it working backwards. What would the headline be in a real press release, for example, if this product were to make it to the market? How would people use it? You can't really articulate that easily in slides with text and bullet points. And so he replaced PowerPoint. He didn't ban it completely from the company. That's a little bit misleading. But he did impose this requirement that in order to pitch a new idea, you had to come in with the written word. So to this day at Amazon, it's very difficult to rise through the ranks unless you're a good writer. And they offer writing classes to everyone who wants it, so that you can become a better writer. Because writing, as you know, Joe, is fundamental. It is foundational to a successful career.
You found that Bezos, over his career, became a better writer, in fact.
Yeah, I did this fascinating piece of research, and it was an amazing conclusion that I reached. I looked at 50,000 words that Bezos had written in his shareholder letters over more than 2 decades. You know, everyone on our podcast here knows what a shareholder letter is when a company is public. It's a public letter. Warren Buffett's probably the most famous writer of shareholder letters. But Bezos' letters, from what I understand, I talked to a number of people, including the co-founder of Netflix, who told me point blank, Carmine, I have his first letter on my desk. I refer to it like once a year because they're so beautifully written. They're very clearly written. So I heard that several times from people who had worked with Bezos. He's a good writer. Ah, okay, well, let me look at these shareholder letters. So I analyzed all 50,000 words, and I noticed that from about the second half of the decade. So let's start from about 2000. He started writing them in 97, around 2007. the writing got significantly better in the second half of the decade. So the last maybe 10 letters. And the way you analyze that is putting them through a software program like Grammarly. And what I found is that the grade level that the shareholder letters were written for came down over time from college level to about eighth and ninth grade level. And if you study Grammarly and you study writing and communication, you'll know that the lower the grade level, the better the writing is. It doesn't mean you're dumbing down the content by any means. It means that you are writing in a way that is simpler and easier to understand. Shorter words, simpler sentences, a better flow, active sentences, subject, verb, object. His writing became better over time because Jeff Bezos is a learn-it-all. One of the Amazon principles is learn and be curious. He's constantly learning. How do I improve this particular skill? Because writing and communication and public speaking are skills. And like any skill, we can improve.
But that's not what people think. We think that if we employ longer sentences and the fact that we're writing college level stuff, Carmine, makes us a badass.
Well, let's turn to Nobel Prize winning behavioral psychologist Daniel Kahneman, who I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with because he was the one who really came up with that list of biases that financial people try to learn and understand. Well, Daniel Kahneman once wrote that if you want to be thought credible and intelligent, do not use a long word when a short word will do. That goes back to Winston Churchill, who during the bombing of London in 1940 was being inundated with memos that were far too long. And he said consumed energy to try to figure out the essential points. So
I'm not going to, hey, Carmine, yeah. I'm laughing as you say this, because I'm just thinking about reading through your book. I'm not going to ask you to recite one today, but you actually list one in your book. I'm laughing out loud about this British memo that is just ugly. Like, I can't even hardly get through it. And you're like, I didn't make this up. This is an actual memo at the time where they're using these $1,000 words. So anyway, back to you. Winston Churchill's like, no. Let's get rid of all this crap.
No. So Winston Churchill, I mean, one of the greatest speakers in history, said short words are best. So memos that use short words are best. So I had to go back to class, Joe, because I was a little puzzled. What do they mean by short words? How do I explain this in a book? What does that mean? So I actually spoke to British grammar experts and English language experts who said, oh, that goes back to 1066. So I had to go back and take a history lesson and writing lessons. 1066 was the Norman invasion when Latin-based words were introduced into the English language. So if you talk about legalese, legal jargon, those are mostly Latin-based and Romance languages. But the original Old English were Saxon-based, Germanic-based. They were short, simple words. Now think about it, Joe. When you want to get an instruction across to people that is clear and urgent, you typically go back to short words. So for example, if we're leaving the house, I might tell you to turn off the lights. Those are all single one syllable words. Turn off the lights. I'm not going to ask you, Joe, it is imperative that upon your departure from the premises that you reduce the illumination. No, if I just want to get to the point, I'll say, turn off the light, Joe. The same applies to business communication. One of the great communicators, Warren Buffett, the most famous quote, be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. How many times have you heard that? It's memorable, and it's an idea that fills an entire books can be on that subject. What does that mean? But do you see what he's doing? He's using words like fear and greed. Fear and greed, if you look them up, if you look up their lineage, are Old English words from before 1066. So when good communicators want to get a message across clearly and succinctly, go back to the short words. As Churchill said, short words are best.
I had not thought about the fact that there's these two different languages inside of our single language until somebody was talking to me about just animals, right? We've got cow, very simple. We've got bovine, which is a whole different thing, or veal and lamb. You know, you've got these two totally different, like, where the hell do you get these two? And it comes down, Carmine, to what you're talking about, these two different languages going on at the same time, but use the very simple stuff. And I love how you ground this. You ground this in a key component. I feel like we're all trying to prove ourselves as brilliant when we talk, when we write. We're trying to show other people we're brilliant. And you say that a key component is not to prove how smart you are, but to start with what your audience knows. If you begin with your audience instead of you, you're going to do a much better job communicating.
I like to say you're not dumbing down the content, you're outsmarting the competition. When you use simple, short words to talk about complex things, isn't it amazing that I was fascinated by the fact that as Amazon grew larger, much larger and far more complex, because after 2007, Bezos was writing about things like cloud computing and Amazon Web Services. So as the company grew more complex, his writing grew simpler, or his writing shrank. Right, the words shrank, the sentence length shrank, it became simpler. And that really is a habit of great communicators, but it takes courage to do this. I recall talking to a McKinsey partner, so, you know, the giant consulting firm.
Sure.
And they only take like fewer than 1% of their applicants. So it's really hard to be a McKinsey partner or a McKinsey employee. I was talking to one of the partners. It was prior to a speech or a presentation that I had to give to McKinsey. And he said, you have to tell everybody to reduce their PowerPoints because these folks come out of business school. They're all MBAs and they walk into a client's office with a 200 slide PowerPoint deck.
Oh, God.
And so what he suggests, this is the partner speaking, for every 20 slides, reduce it to two. That's hard to do when you're fresh out of business school, because you want to prove that you know it all. But as you advance in leadership, effective leaders recognize that they have to simplify their language, simplify their message. It's counterintuitive and it takes courage, but you have to understand that if you want to rise to any level of leadership today.
I feel like, Carmine, this is definitely an extension of Talk Like TED, which I'm using right now to get ready for some talks. I'm going back and revisiting this awesome book that you wrote, where it's not about facts and figures, right? It's about storytelling. Like in Talk With Ted, I think that's a big aha that I got from that. Tell stories because we communicate that way. Use short sentences because this will build this connection that you talk about in both books.
When I was writing the Bezos Blueprint, I realized one of the things that attracted me to Jeff Bezos, in addition to the writing, was he is a storyteller, a great storyteller. And when he talks about the Amazon origin story, he breaks it up into a three-act structure, which is very much like a book or a Hollywood movie. That three-act structure, I believe I also mentioned in TED, but I was able to go take a deeper dive into this new book. All great origin stories have that three-act structure. The three-act structure, which is an easy way to build out a presentation or any conversation, is act one is the setup. What is the state of the world today? Act two is the conflict, the hurdles that you have to overcome to reach your goal. And act three is the resolution. I've worked with a number of wealth managers at some of the major banks around the world. And when they are communicating, the good ones, when they're communicating to their clients about taking a proposed, when they're trying to persuade them to take a financial action of some sort, the best ones will almost intuitively break it up into a three-act structure. Here's where you are today with your finances. Here's the problem with your particular course. And here's the resolution. If you take my advice, here is how we will build your wealth for generations to come. That's a three-act structure. And it goes back to Aristotle. This is ancient. We just have to apply it to modern business communication.
It is so wild. It's ancient, yet we forget it all the time. And it's ancient. It stood the test of time because it works, right? I mean, it absolutely totally works.
Joe, the brain hasn't changed in millions of years, okay? Our technology has. Aristotle, Abraham Lincoln, whoever, great communicators of the past, they didn't have Zoom. They didn't have podcasting. They didn't even have PowerPoint. the technology has changed, but this, the human brain, has not. So if you understand how the brain works, you'll be far more successful.
I want to hear at the end of our discussion, Carmine, get a little English major nerdy. I was an English major in college, and you talk about sentence structure, and you mentioned this briefly earlier, and I really want to go back to it because I think this is a very simple thing that if you grasp this, you can get it right. Talk to me about active versus passive voice, because I found this early in your book is a very powerful tool.
Yeah, let's go back to English class, which I know triggers some people. I think that's why people are afraid. They're afraid of writing.
That's why I waited till the end, by the way, to bring this up.
I went back to class too, because am I a writer? Yeah, well, I guess so. I write books, but how can I talk about writing? I'm not an English professor. I'm not an English writing instructor. So it's very intimidating, right? And so I found that in my own life, right? Writing is intimidating and it's supposed to be hard. Every great writer I've talked to said, it's really, really hard. I said, let me take first principles look at it and go back to writing class and talk to the writing experts and instructors and understand. They all come back to the same themes. So there are very subtle differences in writing instruction, but they all come back to one principal theme. And that theme makes total sense in business. And that's active voice. Subject, verb, object. The simplest sentence that you can write in the English language is the boy kicked the ball. It's simple and it's really easy to follow. It has a perfect 100-point score in Grammarly. The boy kicked the ball. The boy, the subject, kicked is the verb, the ball is the object of the sentence. Not the ball was kicked by the boy. If you take the simplest sentence in the English language and just reverse it into a passive sentence, it becomes just a little more complicated. Now imagine when you actually have complex messages to get out. It's much easier just to stay with the active. 94% of Jeff Bezos' shareholder letters, the writing in those letters, are active language. So active is simple, it's concise, it's to the point. Remember the hurricane in Florida, Hurricane Ian? The first headline I saw was Hurricane Slams Florida, not Florida was hit by a hurricane with 150 mile an hour winds. It's just hurricane is the subject. What did it do? Slams. So the headline writer is choosing an action verb. They're thinking about the verbs they use. It didn't just come across Florida, it slammed the object of the sentence, Florida. That's how you make a headline that's tight, simple, to the point. And that delivers 80% of what I need to know. If that's all I know a lot. The details can come later. That's why the active voice, if that's all you learn, is if that's all you go back to class for is the active voice, it'll significantly improve your writing and all of your communication.
It's a great first step in editing yourself before you send out anything. Check for that active voice. And it's really easy to do. The book is the Bezos Blueprint, Master Communicator, Carmine Gallo, at it again. I love how you taught us how to speak and talk like Ted. And now you're teaching us how to write. Available everywhere, I assume. But do you have a website too? And if people want you to come speak to their group, I know you're available for those people as well.
Yeah, please do. I do mostly keynotes and CEO communication coaching. But yes, if you'd like me to speak to your group, please go to carminegallo.com. And there you'll find a lot of information.
And otherwise available where finer books are sold, Carmine.
Yes, and audiobook as well that I voice. So audiobooks are big for people who like podcasts tend to really like audiobooks as well. Audiobooks is a growing category. So the Bezos Blueprint is coming out on audio. Audible.
Well, and it's funny, I said earlier in this discussion that I was reading again, Talk Like Ted, for a couple big talks I have coming up. I lied about that. I'm actually listening to you on my morning walk. And then I come in and I begin then restructuring my talk based on all the goodness you're telling me. Carmine, thanks for hanging out and helping stackers become better communicators. I love it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Big thanks to Carmine Gallo for stopping by. You know what? Normally at this juncture, we talk to OG and Doug about what we talked about during the interview, but because it's about writing, Paulette Perhatch, who normally sits over by the hot water heater and listens to us destroy the great work that she does for us.
I hold it like a like an orphaned monkey holding its fake mother at the hot water bottle covered in fur.
How are you?
Just for warmth, just to feel something. I'm great. Yeah, it was fun to listen in and hear what they had to say. I've actually written for Amazon. They were one of my clients, which, like, if you're a writer who lives in Seattle, it's like, oh, yeah, I've written for Amazon.
Yeah. You know who I am? Do you know who I am?
Yeah. This is not like a new, do you know who I am?
No.
Flex. I think so.
That kind of is. I wrote for Amazon. That's pretty cool.
Like every artist's dream. Pulitzer is down here. Amazon up here.
I've been in the Walmart catalog. I don't know. Do you know the phrase deep discount? I added the word deep.
See how the two D's? See how there's the D and then the other D?
The alliteration.
That's art. That is art.
Let's nail a couple of these things home in the limited time that we have. The biggest takeaway for you is somebody who's done this for a long time.
I think that trying to sound smart will actually backfire. The big thing about big words is that they distance you from the truth. I love that you can't say S-H-I-T on TV, but I can say defecate, because defecate is the Latin removed word, right? So the way that people actually talk is how we experience life. And so when you use words that humans don't really use, we don't really feel it as much as we would when it's a word we hear all the time, that we hear every day. And I had a boss who actually I felt did not have the ability to tell the truth because he didn't want to own the truth. And so he used all these big words to kind of talk around what he was actually saying. And I think we've all experienced this.
Yeah.
And so I used to say to him, don't use any words that you didn't know when you were 19. That's what I told him. And to have this kind of like lingo. And I love, like, on my team, you know, my assistant and I, if one of us says, like, we'll circle back, we'll be like, ooh, sorry. Didn't mean to say that. Like, we don't say circle back. We don't say ping. We don't say synergize. Like, let's use real human words, because we're like, I want to have a very human company.
I say ping all the time and I can't stop. I can't stop. It's horrible.
One of my like satire ideas was like to say like what these words really mean, so that people would just have like super gross, weird definitions, so that anytime you say it, you're going to have to laugh and feel uncomfortable, and that will train you to not do it anymore. So maybe I'll write that for you, Joe.
Maybe that's what I did. That's what I need to do. Yeah. That's a takeaway. I think also I really like what he said about then starting with the receiver in mind, not you in mind, but the receiver in mind.
Mm-hmm. That's so important. You know, I think that's such a big difference between first drafts and second drafts. I am always, almost always, like when I pitch a story, I'll write, I'd love to write a story for you about XYZ. And instead, when I go and edit it, I'm like, your readers would really benefit in XYZ way from reading this piece, right? What does that person want? And even doing their job for them a little bit, right? If you're writing to like a B2B, what is their mission, and how is what you're bringing to them about their mission and not about you? And that's a huge shift that you've got to think about. And I think if you use short everyday language, it just improves your trust. People are like, this is a real person. I love that we are over this hump of like corporate speak and just, you know, the kind of memos that you guys talked about, the army memos. Yeah. You know, you are transferring a reality that is in your own mind into someone else's mind. And that's a huge challenge. So all these ways you can do it with those active verbs, you know, and I love one thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, he said active verbs are where it's at. So why would people use passive verbs, right? Mistakes were made. I think you can recognize when someone else is BSing you, because, you know, when you learn how to not BS and to be trustworthy, you can learn when other people are BSing you and are not trustworthy. So if I come to you and I'm like, Joe, mistakes were made on this podcast, I effed up the podcast. You can be like, okay, I see some passive voice here. What's going on? They are distancing themselves from the situation. So active voice, it's like everything is connected, everything's close. Passive voice distance and shows like a reception of the action rather than I did the action. It's just fun to be able to look at something like, I love the book Influence. And he talked about that is all about how to influence people to say yes. And he talked about how he himself found himself being influenced by people he didn't want to be influenced by, car salesmen. And he's like, what are these people doing to me? You know? And so he learned about a lot about how language influences people. And he's like, from the side of how to influence others and then how to prevent yourself from being influenced by people you don't want to be influenced by.
I never thought that active verbs would convey trustworthiness, but it totally does. It totally, mm-hmm. and smaller words mm-hmm. and active makes you seem more trustworthy. And I don't trust anybody that is completely 100% super presented. I just don't like mm-hmm. well presented, wears a great watch, fantastic suit. I never trust those people. I don't trust anybody who uses huge words with me. I mean, it's been there the whole time and I never saw it.
It reminds me of Jocko Willink's book, Extreme Ownership, right? Where when you use the active voice, you own what you're talking about. You own your own actions and you're not distancing yourselves. I think it is being shown. It's being seen as a person who controls the situation, has influence over the situation and wants to talk to someone and not show themselves as above anyone else by trying to use all this fancy language. Which is like what I did in eighth grade, you know, writing. I'm like, let me look up the thesaurus and try to sound smart. My teacher was like, what are you doing here? Like totally got me, right? Like that was when I learned that lesson. And some people never learn that lesson. So it's like just, it's about being yourself. Cause no one, one of my favorite things I heard someone say about how we speak in business usually is why do we pretend to be this way? I was like, yes. Like, can we just be humans? And so I think it is that thing where it's like, I'm coming to you as a human, not as this role that I'm playing. And so that is what facilitates the trust.
Fabulous. You find more Paulette at powerhousewriters.com, right?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for weighing in on this.
Hi, I'm David Hirsch. And when I'm not hosting the Dad to Dad podcast for the Special Fathers Network, which is a dad to dad mentoring program for fathers raising kids with special needs, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline, guys, and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life, Doug, they put what you value first.
Well, you know what? What I'm thinking about, what I value are limb saws over chainsaws. Because when you're on a ladder, that branch is going to find you like the ground ball always finds the worst player in the infield.
I got to say, as I get sucked into social media, the number of fails of trees going the wrong way is astounding.
I mean, a huge obvious rule is you never get on a ladder with a chainsaw. And I had a limb I had to get rid of. And I mean, it's just basic. They teach it to you in third grade, right? But I feel like
there's like asterisks unless you're in Arkansas.
But I forgot I had a limb saw actually, and I had the chainsaw in my hand, and like alarms are going off in the back of my head. Don't do this. But I'm like, I gotta get that thing off the garage roof. And so then I spot that saw and I'm like, oh, good. Okay. I'll do that. And I'm on the opposite side of the tree, figure the tree is going to protect me a little bit, but limbs are actually more, they usually do weirder stuff than the entire tree does. In my experience. So, but I thought, oh, I'm pretty safe on this one. Sure enough, as soon as I got that thing to a breaking point, it found a way to come right at me. You know, it wasn't that big. It was only like as big as my upper arm, but it wanted to get me. I could tell it had a mind of its own and it was going to find a way to get me off that ladder. I dodged it, but then all the little fingerling branches at the end, they came and just whipped me in my face. Right there at the end. So right now I am valuing, at least I didn't have a chainsaw, because that was literally the first thing that went through my head was if I had a chainsaw running in my hand as I was trying to dodge out of the way of that thing.
He said chainsaw, comma, that's the first thing that went through my head. Like, that's just not good, OG. Which is why Doug should be valuing life insurance, shouldn't he?
Absolutely. I thought this is the best, most appropriate story I could come up with.
Doug's wife.
For Haven Life.
She's running out going, sign this application really quickly.
Right. Oh, that was the other thing. Nobody else was here. I was totally alone doing this. That was the other
smart move.
Totally stupid decision.
Brilliant.
Here was my thinking on that. I had an AirPod in my ear, and I thought, worst case, I can yell, hey, Siri, call. Somebody.
Good.
Call
He's
Joe.
Already planning. Yeah. And I'll make the 1,000-mile trip up there. Oh, yeah. Believe it or not, he was dead, officer. I tried to get there. It's your loved ones and your time and your life insurance policy and no chainsaws while you're in the tree. It's why they made buying quality term life insurance actually simple. You go to stackybenjamins.com/havenlife now to get your free quote. At Haven Life, they have simplified the application. So before you jump on the ladder with the chainsaw, you can fill that out very quickly. You'll get an instant coverage decision. Price is affordable, all issued by a company that's more than 160 years old, Mass Mutual. Today, we're going to throw out the lifeline to James. Say hi, James.
Call me Ishmael. Or don't. It doesn't really matter because that's not my name. I think we called me Stan when I called in last time. To kind of jog your memory, last time I asked a question about whether or not to buy a home with some additional debt burden. At any rate, I had several people come out and quote what it would cost to build my dream home on my dream property and almost vomited at the thought of the cost. With that in mind, let's just assume that I'm doing all of the right saving, that I'm saving into my 401k and several other vehicles for my kids and all of that. I'm doing okay in that respect. With those things in mind, I want to know what your thoughts are on building a home in today's market, at today's costs. If you were in my spot and you had a home that you were already comfortable in with a low interest rate, but you had a dream property that you wanted to build your dream home on, how would you go about making the decision when to build? How would you go about saving for it? In a market that should be decreasing, home values and building costs should decrease, but investments are going to decrease in value as well. How are you going to save for it with an indeterminate amount of time before you get to build your dream house? I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you, Doug, as well.
Wow. Even Doug gets a thanks at the end of that one. Thanks to you, James, Ishmael, Stan, whatever. I get the feeling we're not getting an accurate name here, but who cares? Let's call him Disgusted OG because as he looks at these prices today, maybe slightly high. What do you think?
You can't take it with you, right? At some level, if you're accomplishing all of your financial goals and you're on track for retirement or you're on track for financial independence and you're sending your kids to school and you're giving money to people that you care about and also you still have cash flow and you want to spend money on a house, who cares how much it costs? You know, you don't owe an explanation to anyone for the things that you want. You're allowed to have any sort of wants that you want. There's no rationalization for everyone else necessary. As it relates to the costs associated with it, or what I guess is maybe the rising costs or the higher costs today than they might have been 6 or 8 months ago or 2 years ago, I don't know that they get better. I don't know that it flatlines or goes down. I do know that some construction costs like lumber and that sort of thing is back to pre-COVID levels in terms of its per foot costs or however they measure it. But also, I'm not sure that construction companies and builders are passing on those savings to people. That just might be how things are these days. And I know that other people have recently quoted out building projects and the price per square foot is pretty high. So I think you just do what makes you happy. And if you've got the money and the cash flow and you're accomplishing all of your other goals, then YOLO, do it.
I agree with everything you just said, OG. Especially the part about the price is probably not coming down. I'm actually going through some of this, you know, these mental calculations right now about buying versus building. And I've found that in the area where I live, semi-rural, I can get a lot more house buying than I can building. Price per square foot.
I think that's true just about everywhere.
Yeah, price per square foot is lower buying the building. The problem is there's very little inventory right now. So you're just kind of caught in the middle. We talk often about the material prices and why construction costs have gone up so much. Those are probably going to flatten out a little bit in the second half here. We're in the second half of 2022. They flattened a little bit. But to your point, the builders have not passed those savings on, and they probably won't. They're probably not coming down much. Labor is another major issue. Depending on where you live, it's very difficult, always has been in that industry, to get trades. It's always been the challenge in that industry, but it's even worse now because a lot of those people in that demographic are finding it's not as lucrative to work as it is to get money in other ways, which we won't dive into. So that is raising that cost, price per square foot. Like in some cases, a third to 50% higher than buying. So that's going to be his tough challenge, is figuring out, can I get the dream home I want for the price I have, for the money I have to spend? Because you're going to get less than buying.
Yeah, you're going to have to make some choices for sure.
Yeah.
But I do think that, back to your point, OG, I mean, truly, this is what it's all about, is what do you value the most? And go ahead and spend money on the things that you value the most. So that's the first question that I would have for James, Ishmael, Stan, is how much do you value this versus the other things? And if you're going to be okay, then I think it's time to suck it up and then just enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Do it, man.
He never says, back to Doug's point, never says that. It's always back to OG's point.
Well, it is. I think you're right on, Doug, that expectations oh, don't try to fix it not, now. That expectations should not be that you're gonna wait for lower. By the way, if you're waiting, you're always going to be waiting. If you're waiting for the computer prices to come down, it isn't going to happen, right? If you're waiting for the next upgrade to the phone before you buy, because, oh, it's going to be outdated the second I buy it. Like, how many years have we heard that over and over and over? If you're waiting, you're going to wait forever. Pick your spot and make the purchase. And I love Paula Pant's take on this. Like, I want to make sure that I have enough money that I don't have to go sale shopping. Don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with sale shopping, but I just want to pick the thing that I want when I want it. Do all the figuring out about what I value first, so I'm not wasting money, and then go buy it. Just go buy it when I want it. Thanks for the question, James, Ishmael, Stan, stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. If you've got a question for the crew as well, and can't wait to hear what you decide, James, that's going to be interesting to hear the next step along the way, since we got step one and now step two of James' journey. Coming up, man, we've got some fun coming up on the community calendar here. Today, we got a packed afternoon and evening here in the basement. First of all, at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, we will be on Instagram Live with Adam Carroll. Adam, of course, has the CNBC documentary Broke, Busted, and Disgusted. He also has speaking of TED Talks, he has a TED Talk seen by millions of people where he plays Monopoly with his kids with real money. And it's an interesting take on how you make different decisions when you use real money. And today he's talking about an app that he's behind, because we often do our fintech work now on Instagram, talking to these cool fintech creators. Adam's behind a product called the Mortgage Shredder, which gets even more analytical. If you want to pay your mortgage off early, gets even more analytical about the right time to pay stuff.
Mortgage Shredder.
Isn't that great? We should add him on around Halloween, like OG.
Sunday, you know? Sunday.
Shredder.
Mortgage Shredder.
Adam Carroll. So if you want to see him, join us at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific over on Instagram. They'll tell you if you're following us on Instagram when we go live. But at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we are on YouTube. And if you would like to get a reminder that we're going to be on YouTube, stackybenjamins.com/live will send you a reminder a few minutes before. I've learned a long time ago not to trust my memory on a lot of these things. But many of you have asked us to walk through Morningstar. OG, you and I talk about Morningstar all the time, about, hey, go to Morningstar to look for this. It's a reliable third-party source to go dive into stuff. A lot of people get tripped up because they almost make you get a user ID, sign up for it. And people are like, I don't know that I want to sign up. It's actually not a bad thing to sign up for Morningstar, and they don't make you pay money, even though you may think that you need to pay some money. So we'll walk through that. We'll show you how to evaluate risk. We'll show you how to look at performance. We'll show you how Morningstar can walk you through maybe doing a better job of evaluating what's in your portfolio. That's tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. But if you're not here because you want to get all nerdy with us on our various social media channels, you are here because you're worried about all this recession talk we had earlier and all the things going on in the market lately. OG and his team have put together a free guide that shares 8 moves to make in a down market. This guide will help you plan more and panic less no matter what the market does. So head over to stackybenjamins.com/guide. That's stackybenjamins.com/guide and you'll get this helpful free guide from OG and his team. So thanks for that, sir. I think that is the community calendar for today. Doug, you got it from here, man. What should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, first, take some advice from Carmine Gallo. Communicate simply to make the most impact. Second, with the Fed raising rates and mortgage rates through the roof, it's time to figure out your debt strategy and, with the holiday season racing towards us, probably a spending plan as well.
But the big lesson?
Never ask Joe's mom if she's a philatelist. Ow! Not the frying pan, Ma! It's a stamp collector. I figured it out. It's a stamp collector. I'm just asking if you're a stamp collector. Thanks to Carmine Gallo for joining us today. You can find out more about his work, including the Bezos Blueprint, at carminegallo.com. We'll also include links in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2022, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy. Our producer is Karen Repine. The show is written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch, with help from Joe, me, and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen to our show, check out the 201 Deep Dives, written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. You'll find the 411 on all things money at the 201. Just go to stackingbenjamins.com/201. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is our social media coordinator and the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So, say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. Both she and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Not only should you not take advice from these dorks, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor.
Did you watch something, Joe?
I did, but we did a review on Monday's show. So I was actually flipping through my flipboard. Say that quickly.
Flip-flop lingo is the lingo.
And I came across this, now that we've talked a lot about roaring into the holidays, 7 true stories about funny Thanksgiving mishaps from Reader's Digest. So this is humor for 95-year-olds. So it's those alone are not as knee slappers you'd think they are. But speaking of that, by the way, Cheryl and I once went to Branson, Missouri. And because, you know, we live maybe 5 hours away. And so we booked an Airbnb that was on a nice lake. And it, by the way, the Airbnb was awesome. We also had lunch at this cool, there's a great resort that's owned by Bass Pro Shops. It's right on the lake. It started snowing while we were there, and they sat us right in front of the fireplace. So big bay windows with snow coming down in the fireplace. That's great. Then we went into Branson to one of these shows. And the thing, the show we went to said, hilarious, right? And it said, I fell on the floor laughing. And Cheryl and I went, and we had to get to our seats. I think we had to kind of wiggle past three oxygen machines. And by the way, you think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. I had three oxygen machines of this tour bus full of people that were in there besides us. I felt bad. There were some kids sitting in front of us that were clearly there with their grandparents to get the stomach busting laughs that this show was going to have that we went to. It was chuckle entertaining. I was, that's good. But yeah, you guys got any Thanksgiving stories back to this? There's a few here that are, this woman just had gotten married and she's hosting the entire family for Thanksgiving dinner. And she ran the dishwasher overnight, but it malfunctioned. And on Thanksgiving morning, I discovered my plastic handled flatware had melted in what looked like a display at the Museum of Modern Art. And why you're running your plasticware through the dishwasher is maybe a sign you're slightly overly frugal.
Just plastic handles.
Yeah. Oh, the plastic handles.
She wasn't putting her KFC spork in there.
That's what I thought she was doing. Oh, yeah, yeah. Makes better sense now.
Now I don't have anything to mock.
The guy who's all excited in his late 20s, and so he's going to make a couple pies, so he makes a magnificent pumpkin pie, he says, with pastry leaves and a blueberry one with a buttery woven lattice. That's the way OG makes his pies, with a buttery woven lattice. And
I am the pumpkin pie maker in our house, and we do some pretty killer pumpkin pies.
How many cans do you open for those pumpkin pies?
I don't even know. Lots.
Yeah. My question is, are you like taking the pumpkins that you had for Halloween and are you like scraping out the insides and making your own pumpkin filling, or are you just grabbing the Libby's?
Let's not get crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
Brooke did a great thing in the 201 about that, found a cool site that went through all the things you can do to recycle a ton of your, like get the most out of your pumpkins when you're done with them. And it was amazing between the pumpkin seeds and pumpkin pie. And
we recycle ours by putting them in the trash.
I just saw a thing.
The recycle guy's really impressed when he gets to the recycle bin and it's full of pumpkin guts.
It's like 79 recycling. Pounds.
It's like recycling, bro.
Speaking of Flipboard, Joe, I just saw a thing saying that now we can't even throw our pumpkins like by the side of the road or in the woods because somehow that's a problem. Like, this is the most natural thing ever. They're going to decompose pretty nicely and pretty quickly.
Why can't you put them in the woods? That
but
seems like a good thing.
That we can't even, I don't know. I thought that's a ridiculous headline. Flip.
I've had people yell at me for throwing apple cores out the window when I drive down the road. They're like, you're littering. I'm like, it's an apple core. It's not litter. It's actually belongs outside.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing outside. That belongs outside.
I'm putting it back home.
Like, I'm not throwing trash out. It's banana peels.
I am Johnny Appleseed here.
Yes, I am.
I am planting trees everywhere I go.
You know, I'm this generation's Lady Bird Johnson, throwing apple cores down the, you know, and 20 years from now, people are gonna be like, look at all those apple trees. Wonder what that's about.
Look at all those Joshua trees.
Joshua.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Joshua trees in the middle of Texas. That would be something. Blue bonnets, apple trees. Lady Bird Johnson gets credit for the blue bonnets. I'm getting credit for the apple trees.
You're welcome, America.
Hashtag blessed.
Well, this show's over, Stackers, but you know what? It's Military Appreciation Month, and that means that we've got time still for a shout out to members of our community, members of our family who have served our country. And you know what? Today, I want to give a shout out to two of my uncles, my Uncle Henry, who was in the Army. Let's do three. My Uncle Eddie, who was in the Army, and my Uncle Bill, also in the Army. And two of them served in Vietnam. One served in Korea. And a big thanks to all three of my uncles, my dad's brothers who served like he did in the military. And this Military Appreciation Month, Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate not just my uncles, but they want to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. Navy Federal offers member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to empower their members and help them reach their goals. Of course, you may be eligible for Navy Federal membership and you don't even know it because it's open to all branches of the military, veterans, DOD employees, and their families. They're all eligible, and I want to reiterate, and their families. If you have family, like I do, who served in the military, well, then you're eligible for Navy Federal membership. Navy Federal's employees are part of the community they serve, and many of them are military family members, reservists, or veterans. Here during Military Appreciation Month, stackers, go visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate, and you're going to see all of Navy Federal's Military Appreciation Month offers. So many cool things they're doing for veterans. You'll also see all their other awesome 24/7, 12 months of the year offers. That's NavyFederal.org/celebrate. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.